It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Alaska's first people viewed the outdoors quite differently than we do today. It was home, and it was the source of food. Subsistence hunting is still a big part of life in rural Alaska, and it still takes a lot of persistence and skill to succeed. But with today's technology, it's hard to imagine the toughness that it took to feed a family before the advent of guns, snow machines, metal fishhooks, or any of the other modern tools we rely on. To get tough enough, northern peoples practiced, built up their strength, agility, and their ability to withstand pain through games they could do all year. Those games are still with us, and on today's show, we'll be talking about the cultural and the recreational and competitive aspects of Alaska Native Games, which happen every year in Anchorage and later this month in Fairbanks at the Arctic Winter Games. And I've got a fantastic panel with me today of experienced athletes who know about the culture and the challenge, and they're coming to us from all over Alaska. In the studio with me right now is Nicole Johnston, who is with Cook Inlet Tribal Council and organizes a bunch of different events here in Anchorage. Thanks for being with us, Nicole.
Thank you.
Joining us from Fairbanks is Erica Meckel. She's an athlete and coach and is going to be participating in the Arctic Winter Games coming up later this month. Thanks for being with us, Erica.
Yeah, thank you.
And Nick Hansen is in Unalakleet, where he's working with young people, and he's also an athlete and competitor and a coach. And thanks for calling in, Nick. We really appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, man.
So, Nicole, for those listeners who have no idea what we're talking about, there's a series of events that really test the physical limits of what the person can do in different dimensions, like agility, leaping, ability to withstand pain, endurance, and then they all come together in a competition. And you put on these competitions here in Anchorage and teach kids to do it, and this is a live and well sport. This is not something that's a cultural artifact.
No, it's not a cultural artifact. It's games that have been passed down from generation to generation to teach not only the kids but help the community work together to survive before everyday today's everyday's amenities were available. Mm-hmm. They had to know how to survive. So these games taught them strength, endurance, agility, concentration, how to endure pain, how to help each other. And through the Native Youth Olympics, both junior and senior Native Youth Olympics, and junior is grades 1 through 6, and through the senior NYO games, grades 7 through 12, we teach these games to the kids so they can learn some of the history and the culture of the Native peoples of the North, not just Alaska, but the North.
And they come in, they're learning about their culture, and they're also playing to win. There's a lot of competition and drive in those games.
There is a lot of competition and drive, but the main goal, especially through the Native Youth Olympics program, is to teach the games and the cultural and the history behind those events and how everybody had to work together and support each other. But yes, it is very competitive, and one of the things that you will see is you'll see competitors helping each other, not just at the NYO competition, but as they graduate into the Arctic Winter Games and World Eskimo and Olympics as well.
So give us a couple of examples of individual events and how they would relate to subsistence lifestyle in the old olden times. Something that we were talking before about the knuckle hop or the seal hop and how that, builds kind of the ability to deal with pain, right?
Right. The seal hop and the knuckle hop are basically both the same event. It's just two different styles. The Native Youth Olympics style is for the men, is in a down push-up position, and they hop on their hands with their first knuckle curled under. And at World Eskimo Indian Olympics and at Arctic Winter Games, the men hop just on their fists, maintaining that down push-up position just off of the floor. Through that, we test.
And we're on a hard floor. We're not on a mat here.
Yeah, we're on a gym floor. Yep, a gym floor. And through that competition, it tests their strength endurance and their endurance to pain because they're hopping on their knuckles. But traditionally, not only was that game used to build strength and endurance, but it was also used as a hunting technique. So, for example, if a seal was sleeping out on the ice, the hunter would carry his harpoon on his back, and he would hop like a seal in that motion as close as he could to the seals that were sleeping on the ice. And then when he got within striking distance, he could reach behind him and grab his harpoon and harpoon the seal that was sleeping on the ice. So it was mimicking and imitating a seal to get close to sleeping seals on the ice.
Yeah, well, a lot of subsistence hunting relies on really strong traditional knowledge of animal behavior, what animals can see, what they can't. And I've the time I've spent in the North Slope, I've seen that, you know, the way that you have to dress the right way, behave the right way, and even avoidance of conflict in the whaling camp is considered important because that's something the whales are going to pick up on. So all these things are passed down, and it's still very useful information. Erica, you are involved in the high kick, and I've seen that, and I think it's one of the most amazing events that I've ever seen, because you don't know how high those guys are going to go when they do it. How did you get into that particular event?
Well, I got started about 8 years ago up on campus at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. They were doing a Northern Inua show, and the person who put it on kept calling me and asking me to come out and learn how to do the games, since I was a competitive gymnast. And once I got started, I ended up falling in love with it. And
the high kick, it's a running jump, and then
yeah.
And it's almost like, looks a little bit like a karate kick, except you're trying to kick a ball that's suspended, oftentimes off like a basketball hoop or something.
Yeah. So depending on the style of the 1 foot high kick, you can get a running approach. You take off with 2 feet, kick the ball, and then land on the kicking foot. But then there's another style where you take off with 1 foot, kick the ball, and then land on the same foot that you kicked with.
Mm-hmm. And how high do people go? I mean, what are what would be a really good kick?
For the women's world record, I think it's 7'7" or 7'8". And then for the men's world record, it's 9'9".
So basically, you're just about touching the basketball rim. I mean, these men are just about touching the basketball rim, kicking a foot up in the air. It's amazing. So tell me how you develop that skill. I mean, that's a pretty amazing skill. I mean, what kind of workout do you do?
Perfect.
You just keep doing it, huh?
Yeah, practicing. You know, a lot of jump training, like plyometrics, weightlifting, and just practice.
Does the gymnastics translate over to it pretty well?
It does. I think gymnastics is a good foundation for it, but I had to relearn a lot of things, because when I first started, I was constantly kicking with a straight leg instead of leading with my knee, and so it was a learning curve in the beginning.
Is this one of those things when you get started on it and then you suddenly realize, I love doing this, I want to do it all the time, and so the practice is just something that pulls you along?
It is, and I think when it comes to kicking, it's a relaxing thing, because you're just standing there focusing on just the ball, and so, you know, it's not like a normal workout, it's not like a normal competitive sport, you're just focusing on, you know, going up and kicking.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then you achieve something that's pretty remarkable when you're good at it. Nick Hansen's with us from Unalakleet, where he's having a busy day with a basketball tournament that's going on there, and I appreciate you being with us, Nick. What are your big events in the games?
My favorite events are also the high kick events that are going on, and they'll be held at the Arctic Winter Games this year. But my favorite event, not actually in the Arctic Winter Games this year, it's going to be the toe kick, and that's I think that's my favorite. I really like it because it takes a lot more delicate skill involved in that game.
Tell us about that one. I'm not familiar with that.
The toe kick is, they basically set a dowel, like a wooden dowel out onto the floor. And the idea is to get as far out of a broad jump as you can. And then, so you jump out as far as you can and you tap with both of your toes at the same time and you kick the dowel backwards. So that you jump out forwards, tap the stick backwards, and then land on the opposite side, maintaining your balance.
Wow, that sounds really difficult.
It's hard, it's difficult to envision.
But yeah, you're such, it's almost like you're doing a delicate behavior with your feet, moving this dowel while you're airborne leaping.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Very much. Yep.
How long did it take you to learn to do that? I don't think I could do that.
The first year that I've done it was in 2006, and that was the first year that I remember being incorporated into the Native Youth Olympics when I was in high school. And I just kind of started doing it, and our farthest kicks were in the competition at our regional event were about 48 inches, and then I think the farthest kick was 60 inches that year. And as time goes on and you just keep working at it, you really get the feel of how to, the right motion you need and when to time it and how to flick your feet just perfectly back. And last year at the World Eskimo Indian Olympics, we were able to reach upwards of 98 inches, which would be about 8'2".
That's amazing. So that's how far you're, what is that 98 measuring? How far you're going or how far the dowel's going?
How far the dowel will be set out away from you. So there's a line, you stand behind the line and then you jump out forward on a broad jump. And that's how far the stick would be set out.
Wow.
What Nick's not telling you too is that the toe kick is one of the most difficult events in any native sport competition. There are very few people who can do it well. And Nick is one of those people. He actually, before this year at Native Youth Olympics, a record was broke by a young man from Unalaska. But prior to that, Nick was the co-record holder with a gentleman who had held the record for 30 years.
Wow.
So
Nick, tell me I asked Erica, how did you get into this and how did it, obviously it caught your imagination, it caught your desire to be good at this. How were you introduced to it and how did that take place that you got really into it?
When I was in high school, I was really actually reluctant to join the Native Youth Olympics because I thought it was kind of corny. You know, I was a basketball player, I was a cross-country runner, but Native Youth Olympics was kind of just like, I don't really want to. And then my junior year in high school, I decided, what the heck, I might as well go for all the sports because I was in every sport from the start of the school year. And then once I joined it, it immediately became my favorite sport because it was so, like Nicole and Erica said, it's all about everybody helping everybody as a community. And when I came to practice, it wasn't compete against the other player, it wasn't run faster than the other player, it was help each other get to their best goal. And I thought that was that feeling, that vibe of just everybody helping each other just kind of, you know, flows through my veins. And I love that feeling. And it just helped push the competition higher and pushed us to do our best. And ever since then, I've been just in love with it. I love coaching it. I love seeing the kids go from straight from basketball where it's completely competition and you got the fans going against everybody, but to an event like NYO and it's just even the fans want to get out there and help and the coaches from the other team come out and help coach the other athletes even though they're competing against them. It's just such a great sport, and that vibe and that feeling has helped me to just fall in love with it and stick with it, and I'll be doing it until I can't jump anymore.
That's great. You know, and that's a real native value, is that cooperation and working together towards a goal, right? And in a way, your basketball and cross country running is that competition is not really indigenous value. I mean, that mm-hmm. competing against somebody else. Is that part of the whole thing, Nicole, is creating that community feeling of mutual support?
Oh, most definitely. And that, like I said earlier, is one of the things that we teach the kids, that you had to rely on other people in your community and in your village to survive. Sometimes you just weren't the strongest person in the village and you had to rely on that other person who was strong in the village to help you do something. So you had to make sure that you kept those relationships strong and then you supported each other. And through these games, I've seen so many people grow, personal growth, just true personal growth, or they have really changed, stayed in line so they could participate, especially at the high school level. Maybe some kids that haven't done real well in school or maybe we're heading down the wrong path, have gotten into the Native Youth Olympics program and have really done a turnaround. Mm-hmm. I've seen that personally for years because I've been involved a lot in coaching. So,
yeah,
and it's a very personal, very personally rewarding to see the kids grow like that.
Yeah, yeah. And this is Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about Alaska Native Games. A bunch of competitions are coming up. We're going to talk about that more in just a minute. And so many different topics to get into, and I've got a fantastic panel that we're talking about it with, about it with today. Nick Hansen is in Unalakleet. He's a coach. He's a competitor. Erica Meckel is in Fairbanks, getting ready for the Arctic Winter Games. Nicole Johnston is here in Anchorage. She's with Cook Inlet Tribal Council and organizes some of the competitions, such as the Native Youth Olympics. So I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming competitions that are taking place, because there's a lot going on. There's some things that happen all the time and some things that happen only over longer time periods. And then the Arctic Winter Games is a worldwide event. People from all over the circumpolar north are coming. Nicole, can you just sort of give us the thumbnail sketch of what these different events are and sort of the rough timing of them?
Well, at Arctic Winter Games, it's not just traditional Native games
right.
being played. It's
right.
it's a all winter type of
sort
games.
Sort of a Northern Olympics, if
yes,
you will.
Sort of like a Northern Olympics. But at Arctic Winter Games, there are two Native sports. They're called Arctic sports. One is the Inuit Games, and then one is the Dene Games. And Erica and Nick are both part of the Inuit team, the open male and open female team. There's also a junior division.
And so they're competing on behalf of Alaska against the other nations.
The other contingents, mm-hmm. which are Greenland, Canada, and the territories in Canada, Yukon, Northwest Territories, Nunavik, mm-hmm. Nunavut, Northern Alberta, and Northern Quebec. So each of those contingents bring their top athletes. In Alaska, to go to Arctic Winter Games, you have to be selected based on your performances at Native Youth Olympics and at World Eskimo and Olympics or some other competition that can give results to the sport coordinator. And the sport coordinator selects those athletes based on their performances. And the other contingents in Canada, they have tryouts because sometimes they don't have as many traditional Native games competitions as Alaska does.
Mm.
But they still bring their best athletes. So to go to Arctic Winter Games, it's really pretty...
It's an honor.
It's an honor to go because you're one of the top athletes and you get to compete against the top athletes. And you create lifelong friendships because it's still the same community competition, just like it is at any other Native sport competition. Everybody still helps each other from one contingent to the next. Old coaches help new coaches. Coaches mm-hmm. coach other teams' athletes, vice versa. So that still remains the same through the Arctic Winter Games competition.
So Erica, you, I guess this is your fourth Arctic Winter Games, and I understand you are going to have been selected by Team Alaska to be one of the two athletes to read the athlete's oath at the opening ceremonies. Tell me about being involved in this big event. It must be pretty exciting.
Just getting to go to Arctic Winter Games is a pretty huge honor. And to have been recommended by Nicole to be one of the two athletes that administers the oath and gets to be a flag bearer is kind of like the cherry on top. It's just a great experience. I always have a lot of fun. I always learn a little something new about myself every time I get to go and compete. And it's a really great event to get to be a part of. And it really is just a big honor to be able to be involved with something like that.
So where have you been? Where has this taken you in the past for the other Winter Games that you've participated in?
So the other Winter Games that I've been in have been in Yellowknife, Grand Prairie, and Whitehorse. and then, of course, the one coming up in the next few weeks here.
And how big of a deal is it for the town? I mean, some of those towns you just mentioned are pretty small, even compared to Fairbanks. I mean, it must really take over the whole town.
I think it is a pretty big deal for the whole town. It does bring in a lot of people. And I think the most exciting part about having it just here in Alaska is that, you know, friends and family can finally come watch and experience such a huge event.
Mm-hmm. Do you have, what kind of success have you had in the past? Is it something where you're trying to medal or you're trying to win as a team? I'm not sure how that works.
When I go to Arctic Winter Games, my first thought is, what's my new person? Like, what is my main goal? And my main goal is to always have a new personal best. So this year, I'm pushing for a new personal best in 1 foot and 2 foot high kick. And whether that gets me a medal or not, I'm just going to be happy if I get it. And it is nice getting medals and helping my team. But my main goal is just to see how well I can do and how hard I can push myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nick, you're going to the Arctic Winter Games this year, and I guess this is your first trip to the Winter Games?
Yep.
All right. What thoughts are going through your mind? Do you have some goals like Erica was talking about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like Erica said, it's all about getting how much can you do as competitively. It's how much can you push yourself to go as far as getting medals and helping the team out. Like she said, it's always a great thing to help the team and to win in that sense. But the most rewarding win is when you get a personal Hyatt or a personal best. But as my first time going to Arctic Winter Games the moment that I got chosen for the team, I mean, I was literally speechless. I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, oh, man, this is such an honor and such a great opportunity to just represent the games and be a part of something so just prestigious as far as the native games goes, and being able to represent and being chosen to say you're an athlete that we want to represent here. I mean, I was just honored and I'm still speechless.
You're doing a great job. So did you qualify by virtue of a particularly high kick or other achievement in the sport, or is there also sort of a choosing a team aspect of this? I don't know how that works.
I guess I would kind of defer that question to Nicole, but I think that because I was chosen as – I think that my performance at the World Eskimo Indian Olympics probably helped me out. I got a couple of gold medals and then a couple of silver medals, and obviously the being up there on the podium helps put my face out there. But I know that Nicole has told me in the past, and another athlete named David Thomas, he's a big name in the games, also told me I was probably chosen because of how much I help other people and how much I like to just kind of push everybody and myself to the next level. And I think that's why I was chosen, but I mean, I'm kind of modest about it. I don't know how to talk about myself. If Nicole
answer
that question.
Well, you must be really good at high kick. That's the event the main event where you're going to be competing.
Yeah.
And is that your gold medal event from the Eskimo Indian Olympics or?
Last year I was able to get two silvers in the high kicks, one in the 1 foot and in the 2 foot high kick, facing off with the world record holder, Tim Field. He holds the world record for the 1 foot high kick. And it was really fun to just, I mean, I went up and kicked as high as I could, and he went up another 5 inches or so. So, I mean, he's got something else going for him.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of fun to stand there and be able to witness that and be on the floor with him and see it happen. And it was fun to perform with him.
Yeah, and it's great for the spectators, too. You know, a few years ago, it's probably quite a few years ago now, there was some martial arts guy from the lower 48 who had a TV show or something and said, I could kick higher than anyone in the world. And one of our athletes went down there.
Jesse Frankson from Point Hope.
Okay. You could tell the story, Nicole, because I love that story.
Well, they had a to see how high you could just kick with 1 foot.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't exactly doing the 1 foot high kick, but they were just seeing how high they could actually kick a target at a specific height. And
And this was being like televised. This guy wanted to show that he was the best.
Yep, guy wanted to show that he was the best, and he kicked it, and then Jesse goes up and he just kicks it, no problem. And the guy goes up and kicks it, and Jesse kicks it, no problem.
A little higher,
And then they go a little higher, and then the guy misses it, and Jesse goes up and kicks it, no problem. And Jesse wanted to actually move it up higher, and they said, no, we need to keep it low enough so people can actually break the record.
Yeah. So what we've got here in Alaska is the best athletes in the world in these particular skills, and it's really exciting to have you guys on the radio with me today. It's Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Wolforth. Nicole Johnston is with me, who's just speaking. She's with Kukanet Tribal Council. Erica Meckel's with us from Fairbanks, and Nick Hansen from Uniliklit. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking a lot more. I want to talk, especially since you guys have all coached young people, about what it's like getting them involved and what kind of changes you see in their lives and their interest in their culture when they get involved in these games. So that's all coming up in the second half of the show. So please stay with us. But right now, it's time to turn it over to our AK On The Go mom, Erin Kirkland. Erin is an expert on family travel and outdoors in Alaska. She's got a book coming out that looks really exciting. She's going to be with us to tell us about outdoor activities for families coming up in March on the monthly edition of the Outdoor Explorer Family Calendar.
Hello, Outdoor Explorers. I'm Erin Kirkland, publisher of akonthego.com. Welcome to the March Family Calendar with kid-friendly lists of Alaska activities and events.
I love to play outside. It's awesome.
Fairbanks is celebrating the 26th year of Ice Alaska and the World Ice Art Championships through March 30th. Amazing sculptures made of ice and an ice playground just for families complete this picture. Visit icealaska.com for information. Anchorage Parks and Recreation is offering a guided snowshoe hike on Saturday, March 8th from noon to 2 p.m. $15 per person with some gear available courtesy of REI. This hike is suitable for kids age 5 and up. Call 343-4217 to register and get the starting location. The Center for Alaskan Coastal Studies in Homer invites everyone to weekly winter fun at Wynn Nature Center. Roast marshmallows, take a hike, go geocaching, or just enjoy the view. Free and great for all ages. Visit akcoastalstudies.org for information and directions. And finally, springtime marks the annual Healthy Futures Challenge to encourage all Alaska kids to get outdoors and stay on the go. I spoke with Harlow Robinson, Executive Director of Healthy Futures, to learn more. Hi, Harlow. Thanks for joining me today.
It's good to be with you, Erin.
So tell us a little bit about the Healthy Futures Challenge. I know my son came home with a sheet of paper and said, I need to fill this out. So what is this?
Right. It's actually biannual. There's a spring challenge and a fall challenge. It's a three-month program. We run through the elementary schools across the state, all of our partnering schools, which are now almost 170. We almost hit 17,000 elementary age students. They complete an activity log, and each month that they turn in a complete log, they get a prize. And if they complete all 3 months, they're eligible for a grand prize.
Ooh.
Schools are also rewarded for participation. And really what it's all about is creating a conversation and a culture about the importance of being active. And what a successful log looks like is the full month of being active at least 30 minutes a day per week, or sorry, three times a week. The guideline and really the ultimate goal would be every day, 60 minutes a day, but we're shooting for small successes and rewarding them as we go.
Right, right. So is this something you would also encourage the whole family to take part in? I know my husband and I do, you know, when we look at the log, we say, you know, maybe we should all go on a hike or do something like
that. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Certainly a family that does these things together is going to be a healthier family, both physically and, you know, for other reasons.
Yeah.
But certainly it's great role modeling for your kids to get out and play with them.
Cool. So what kinds of activities are we talking about? This doesn't have to be like an organized soccer team or a ski team. You know, this can be kind of free-form playing too, right?
Yeah, and we really stress that. I mean, the kids that need this the most are usually the ones that are not on teams, and maybe they don't view themselves as active, physically active people. So, you know, we really stress being successful with this. Could be as simple as just getting out, walking your dog, look for small steps. But it can be, you know, just like our the slogan, get out and play. It could be just getting outside and moving and getting your heart rate up a little bit.
Fantastic. So how do parents and educators and community members find out more about this? Because this sounds like a ton of fun.
Yeah, our website would be the first place to go, www.healthyfuturesak.org. And if, you know, like I said, we're at 170 schools statewide, and here in Anchorage, 60 out of 69 public schools, but you know, there are many schools that are not signed up. So if you know your school is not signed up, I would, as a parent, go talk to the principal and see what it will take to get the school on board.
Awesome. So healthyfuturesak.org is the website you need to go to if you want to find out more about the Healthy Futures Challenge. And this sounds like a great opportunity for everyone, young, old, and in between, Harlow. So thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Look for links to the Healthy Futures Challenge and all events mentioned in the family calendar at alaskapublic.org. And be sure to join me in April for more kid-friendly fun. Have a safe and outdoor-themed spring break. This is Erin Kirkland with akonthego.com.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking today about native games. You may have seen some of them. The high kick is one of the more famous ones, it's a whole series of games that were traditionally developed to help subsistence hunters be agile, strong, tough, to have endurance, to succeed in the outdoors, and have been passed down traditionally and are still pursued, in fact, pursued maybe more than ever now, with a whole bunch of different competitions that take place. And one of the biggest ones is coming up, Arctic Winter Games is coming up in Fairbanks this month. And there will be people competing in these games from all around the circumpolar Arctic. And we've got three guests today who know a lot about this, and it's been a really interesting discussion. Nicole Johnston is in the studio. She's with the Cook Inlet Tribal Council. Thanks for being with us, Nicole.
Thank you.
Erica Meckel is an athlete and coach from Fairbanks. Thanks for being with us, Erica.
Hi, thank you.
And Nick Hansen is joining us from Unalakleet. He's an athlete. He's also a coach, Bering Strait School District, and helps kids get into this sport. Thanks for being with us, Nick.
Yeah, thanks.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about getting kids involved and what that's like, and how you get them involved and what kind of changes you see in them. Nick, you're working with kids at the schools there in Unalakleet and that Northwest Arctic region. I know basketball is always really big in your part of the world. Is there any challenge in getting kids involved in this, or is it something that's really popular and everybody wants to be in?
Yeah, it's definitely got its challenges as far as getting people involved, just because it's right immediately following the basketball season. So sometimes you know, you have 25 kids on the basketball team, and you're trying to get them involved and invigorated about, hey man, NYO is coming up, let's do this. And then they, most of the time, they kind of just want to break as far as that goes. But then you got a group of kids that are just like, yeah man, let's do it. And you kind of feed off of those kids that are more excited about it, and you have them help you guide more kids to do it. Last year, or the couple of years back, we only had about 7 athletes on the Unilocleat team, and it was just a matter of showing them really what it was, what the games were. And that's when I first came here to start coaching. And once I think that they understood the true meaning behind the games and got to see, you know, an athlete such as myself that was once part of the school do it and show them, like, hey, man, this is what you could be capable of, then they were like, oh, man, that's pretty awesome, because then they realized Nick did it. You know, he's lived here his whole life. I could do it too. And I think that's kind of where I thrive as far as getting kids more involved.
Yeah, well, it's an age where in every culture, kids are not necessarily that interested in what their parents want them to be interested in, right? I mean, right. All over the world, teens want to be interested in whatever their parents don't want them to be interested in. Like a hip, you know, you see kids in an Arctic community running around in hip hop clothes, you know, and you think, wow, that doesn't fit in, right? But that's part of being a teen. So, but this is a way to kind of connect them with their culture. And do you see that? Once they get into the games, then that connection starts to take place. Does it help them get more connected to their culture?
Oh, definitely. A few of the kids that are in seventh grade here, or were in seventh grade last year, and now are eighth graders, have not only wanted to learn the games more, but I've seen them practicing them at the basketball court in the summertime and just playing around with and carrying around hacky sacks, because hacky sack is a good way to kind of keep your kicks moving. And once they picked up on that, they started seeing things go more their way. But this year at school, I have a chance to be the native arts teacher, and a lot of the kids wanted to make NYO balls as part of their project, and then they also wanted to use only their Eskimo names during class, and they wanted to learn a new Eskimo word every week or a new Eskimo word every day. And I didn't come up with that idea. I mean, it was a great idea to use, but I had kind of wanted to start more basic, but they started bringing that in, and I think that definitely had a big deal about what seeing the native games and getting more in touch with their culture, as you said.
Right, so it's a kind of opening that door with something that's mm-hmm. really fun, and then their interest. Have you seen that a lot, Nicole, and in a lot of kids that this is an entryway to get back into their culture?
Oh, definitely. I've worked with kids for so many years, and I've gone into some schools, and you know, you got those cool kids who are like, I don't want to do that. That's too easy. I'm like, show me. Mm-hmm. Let's see if you can do it. And they do it, and they can't do it. Or they try it, and they can't do it. And they're like, whoa, that's harder than I thought. And then they try it again. And then they try it again, and the next thing you know, they're hooked.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, I do see that. And then they want to know more. They're like, ooh, what else can we do? Hey, because there are hundreds of games to play. And when you get tired of doing one game, you just go on to the next one, or you say, hey, show me a game I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fun. They're challenging. Some are, you know, see who's strong. Some are just to see who can make you laugh. And they're just, there's so many different games.
That's interesting. I wonder if there's an aspect where once you get into it, because it's yours culturally, that makes it unique and special. Whereas if you're playing basketball or football, you're doing something that everybody's doing. It doesn't necessarily belong to you. Do you feel that way about it?
I personally do, because I think to myself, my ancestors played these games hundreds of years ago. And I remember my grandmother and another very elderly lady that I was close to growing up telling me about some of the games that they were doing and how proud they were of me carrying on those traditions of those games. And that filled me with pride, gave me that moment to say, well, I'm doing something to preserve my culture, and it's important, and they're proud of me. And when they told me that, I couldn't help but grin from ear to ear, because that's a big compliment coming from the elders.
You're doing what they did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Erica, you were talking about you were involved in gymnastics before you got involved in these games. Did it have any impact on you in terms of connecting to your culture?
The games had a huge impact on me. When I was going to school here in Fairbanks, throughout junior high and high school, I didn't know anything about my culture. I didn't want any part of it. My mom would make me these beautiful beaded gloves and hair breadths, and I didn't want to wear them because I didn't want to get picked on at school. And then as soon as I got into the games, I just had this sense of identity and, you know, pride in myself. And so once I started with the games, I wanted to learn more. I wanted to do more. I wanted to share it with everybody. And it pushed me into the career that I actually work in now. I do juvenile probation. And because of the games, my desire was to work with other Alaska Native youth and push them into stuff like this, too. So one cool thing that I get to do is I'll work with kids who've gotten in trouble. And just recently, actually, I had a couple kids who came in that were, you know, not going down the right direction. And I told them, you can either do a bunch of hours of community work service or you can do the games. And they chose the games. Uh-huh. And so things like that, you know, that's just what's so great about the games is getting to do things like that and, you know, sharing it with other people and showing them that they can be proud of who they are and where they come from.
Do you remember that moment when you were, you know, it sounds like you kind of didn't want to show yourself as being Native, and then you got into these games where everyone was Native. Do you remember that moment when you started to feel like you belonged?
Yes, I was at WIO in 2006, and just watching, I want to say it was, we were doing 1 foot, and just watching everybody helping each other and talking to each other, and I had never seen that when I was doing gymnastics. As a competitive gymnast, you know, you had to watch out even for your teammates. And so seeing that people who didn't know me were coming over and telling me, oh, you need to do this differently, it was just a sense of community, too. And while I was there, I was like, this is what I'm proud of. Mm-hmm. And it was just the greatest feeling, and I just took it and ran with it since then.
That's great. And now you're passing it on to new kids and letting them have the same experience you had. And have you had the pleasure of sort of seeing that happen to other kids?
I just in my 1 year of coaching, I did get to watch that, you know, other kids trying to share it with each other and pass it on to each other too. You know, unfortunately I didn't get to coach this year because I'm going back to school, but I think that's where I was the proudest, was when I was coaching and watching the kids share it with each other, because that was something that I had taught them and passed on to them. And that was probably the best feeling that I've gotten from the game, so was coaching.
That's great. It's wonderful to hear about that that aspect of it. And it's also interesting for me as sort of an outsider to hear that you guys don't talk too much about, like, who's the best. I know you guys are two of the best, but I don't hear a lot of, like, you know, I'm the best, he's the best. It's all not all about being the winner, although there's honor in that, but it's also about this sense of sharing and community, which is an unusual thing in sports. We move to that competitive place really, really easily. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about Alaska Native Games. The Alaska Winter Games are coming up, and there are other competitions coming up where traditional games that were created to aid in survival, aid in success with hunting, are practiced and passed on to the future generations, and obviously have a lot of cultural and emotional impact. And we were just hearing from Erica Meckel, who's in Fairbanks. She's going to be part of the Winter Games. She's been honored by being selected by Team Alaska to be one of the two athletes to read the athlete's oath at the opening ceremonies. She's also coached for the Fairbanks Native Youth Olympics. She's going into her fourth Arctic Winter Games, expert in the high kick. Nick Hansen's with us from Unalakleet. He's works with kids in the Bering Strait School District. He's going to Arctic Winter Games, another high kick athlete, does other events as well. And in the studio with me is Nicole Johnston from Cook Inlet Tribal Council, who organizes a lot of these events and keeps it all going and knows an awful lot about it. Nicole, you were mentioning, and we were talking a little bit about how different tribes, different communities obviously had different games, and yet you're doing international competition, so there must have been sort of a process of sharing back and forth of what these games are. And you also mentioned going down south and learning about games from other tribes. I guess this is a common thing. It makes sense that people all over the world would have created games to train and help them be good hunters and good successful in the outdoors. How does that work with trading these games back and forth? I mean, and what have you learned from other people from around the world?
Well, games were all played basically for the same reason, traditionally, to build strength, endurance, agility, concentration, to pass on time, to test somebody's judgment, mm-hmm. for example. So within the communities of the Northern people, most of the games that are played at World Eskimo and Olympics, Native Youth Olympics, and at Arctic Winter Games are games that were created by the Inuit people along the northern parts of Alaska, the western part of Alaska and the northern part of Alaska, all the way over to the eastern edges of Canada and some even into Greenland. And by the Native peoples, traditionally being nomadic people, they shared these games from one village to the next, to the next, to the next, and so on and so forth. So many of the games are the same. There might be a different version from one game or the other. And you go to a new community and you learn a different game. Mm. Or you say, hey, let me show you this game. Oh, I've never seen that game before. And that is so much fun. And when we have little breaks, for example, at Arctic Winter Games in a couple of weeks, you'll see that among the athletes when they have a little bit of downtime. They'll say, hey, can you do this? And it is competitive, but it's a fun competitive competition. And this past summer, I took Erica and Nick both with me down to Montana to the White Fish Indian Reservation, I think it's called, in northwestern Montana to the International Traditional Games Conference. And we shared
So this would be games not just from northern people, from indigenous people all over the world.
Yep, from all over the world. Mostly North American indigenous games. Mm-hmm. So games from the Inuit people. We shared our games with them, and they shared some of their Indian and Dene games with us, and they gave us some tools and games stuff to bring back, and we gave them some of our equipment as well. And they keep all of these games in a sacred blanket wrapped mm-hmm. up. So when they have conferences or other community events, they open up the blanket to share these games with everybody else. And that's how we share our games, passing them from one community to the next.
What kind of differences, since these games are originally based on survival success in the outdoors, and of course it's very different down south where it might be desert, it might be plains, than up in the Arctic, what kind of differences do you see in the games? I mean, are the games very similar to ours, or are they different?
Most of them are pretty different, but have the same reason behind them. Mm-hmm. For example, we have a game called Eskimo Stick Pull, and that's two athletes that face each other and they try to pull a stick away from their opponent. Mm-hmm. That game in Alaska was played to build the strength the hunters needed in their hands and their backs and their arms for pulling seals out of the water. They would play games down in the lower 40, in the Indian in the lower 48 area, mm-hmm. To build strength, for example, for throwing spears. There's also harpooning games. So those are similar, but it would depend on the type of animal that you're going after.
Right. What the tool is that you're going to be using.
Yeah. What the tool is that you're going to be using.
Do you think that still has meaning in terms of the subsistence practices that people have today, because we're using different tools, obviously. Do the games still prepare people for being hunters?
I believe they do. I grew up traditionally hunting. Of course,
where here in Nome.
I grew up in Nome, and I was fortunate enough to go seal hunting and walrus hunting, and moose hunting and caribou hunting, all of the things. But with a rifle and a snow machine and a boat, but you still have to deal with the weather, and Mother Nature is in charge. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to be strong physically and emotionally if you get into a situation. For example, we were out seal hunting and walrus hunting one time, and the wind turned on a dime. We had, 10, 12-foot swells. We're in an 18-foot open boat, and the ice moved in. And you get caught in between the ice floes, and you just pull up on an ice floe, and you stay out there until you can find a lead that can take you back to where you need to go, or you work your way through the leads to get back to town. Mm-hmm. And that was back before we had cell phones. We didn't have a radio. We were out there for 2 days. So you have to make sure you've got water. You got to make sure you had food. We had seal and walrus in the boat, so we weren't going to starve. But when you're going up and down those 10, 12-foot swells and you're slamming on the other side, it can be a little bit scary. Mm-hmm. And you have to be mentally prepared to deal with those situations. And these games still do that for you today.
Nick, same question for you. Do you feel like the games still have utility in terms of preparing you for hunting and the outdoors and just the real-life experiences that you run into?
Oh, definitely. A couple years back, I was out seal hunting, and the ice had just come in, and we went out to the edge of the ice on our snow machines to go seal hunting, me and a couple of my friends, and I was kind of pushing the edge a little bit so that I can, just to look, I just wanted to go out there and check it out, and my buddies were sitting there waiting, and they were getting ready to get some lunch going, so I went out, and we were taking a break, and I walked out to the edge to see what was going on, and the ice floe just happened to break out, and I had to jump from one ice floe to the next. I had to get back to the main ice so that I could run back, because my weight just happened to shift at that perfect amount, and it wasn't a real far jump, but I definitely was prepared to make the jump that I needed to make. And I think that like I said, toe kick and the 1 foot high kick and those events that we were doing as far as jumping goes prepared me for something that could have very quickly turned to be bad news, me getting into the ice, falling in with the cold water and everything, and that could have been dangerous. And these games have helped prepare me for that situation perfectly, and there's no better explanation than the games themselves that helped me that day.
And I think I'll bet that the elders of old were thinking about that when they invented those games, because I think there's even a Nupiak word for jumping from one piece of broken ice to the other. People have had to do that for 1,000 years, and it sounds like your ancestors prepared you well for what you faced.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm interested, Erica, I know you live a more urban lifestyle there in Fairbanks. Do you feel like the games translate to everyday life for you, or is it more a recreational sports thing for you?
I would say I probably don't use the physical aspect of the games as much in everyday life. They do keep me limber and fit, which is really important for my job since I do probation work. But for me, I've learned a lot mentally, like how to be mentally stronger, accepting things, because when you're doing the games, some days you just have it and some days you don't. And so being able to accept that you're just not at your peak that day, or one of the more important things that I learned from the game is not only how to be a gracious winner, but I had to learn how to be a gracious loser. And coming from a competitive gymnast background, that was not my specialty. So just learning patience and accepting things for what they are has been what I use every day. And also just that confidence in myself and being able to believe in myself.
Have you done any of these games that involve pain? We talked about the seal hop or knuckle hop, and then there's also the ear pull, which doesn't look like it's too much fun. Have you done any of those?
I've done the ear pull. It's not my favorite, and
that's
I really
where there's a string attached to your ear, right? And you're pulling against another person. Sort of, it's a whoever cries uncle first.
Pretty much. It's just a tug of war with a piece of sinew. But out of all the pain tolerance games, I think knuckle hop is my favorite.
Uh-huh. And that does, I mean, if you can take discomfort and pain, that gets you through a lot of things in life, I think.
I do want to mention, though, that the pain events and the strength events traditionally were only men's events. But through this friendly competition, the women are allowed to do those events. But at the World Eskimo and Olympics, the women are not allowed to do these pain events like knuckle hop or the strength event, four-man carry or airplane or drop the bomb, we call it, because those are traditionally men's events. If they want to do those events, they have to ask for permission from the men to do those events, and it must be unanimous among the men to allow the women to compete in those events. That wasn't always true, though. Up until, I think, 4 years ago, Erica, you guys were allowed to do knuckle hop?
Yeah, the last year was when I went really far. So it was about 2009 is when we had to start getting permission from the men.
Mm-hmm. So, Nick, I'm just guessing that it's not that easy to get the young people to jump into these events that involve a lot of pain, or am I wrong?
Actually, sometimes it's easier to get the kids to do the more painful events because they want to see if they could beat the other guy. That's where a competition really plays a favorite.
Who's tougher in the youth?
Yeah, because they want to try to prove, hey man, I'm stronger than you, you know, and I think that's kind of where it really came from, is in our inside, you know, we kind of really want to say, I want to be the toughest, I want to be the toughest, you know, and that's kind of a traditional thing too. I mean, you see it with
it's everyone, every, it's a human thing.
Everyone.
Yep. Well, this has been a great topic. I'm so appreciative of you guys coming in and sharing it with us. The games are coming up, and I wish the best of luck to all of you. Erica Meckel joined us from Fairbanks. Nick Henson is in Unalakleet. Thank you both of you for taking the time and hanging on to the phone for so long. Nicole Johnston here in Anchorage. And we also heard from Aaron Kirkland of AK On The Go with the Family Calendar. On our next show, we're going to be talking next week about fitness training. Especially with spring coming, many people who have gotten a little too sedentary over the winter are thinking about upping their activity level. I'll have a coach, a physical therapist, and a dietitian with me to talk about how to do it safely and successfully and how to take your training to the next level if you're already working out but want to be more competitive. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Monica Gokey, and I'm your host, Charles Woolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.